Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the regular meeting of the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. Audience members, I want to start by asking you to please silence your electronic devices. I would also like to remind you that in addition to the audience in this room, we have people watching and listening online. So please consider your language and comments and testimony today. Today's meeting is a hybrid board meeting. Some presenters and guests will appear in person and some will appear virtually. For those presenting virtually, please mute your mic when not speaking, and when presenting, make sure to unmute your mic and turn on your camera. For those joining us in person to provide public testimony or to present, please turn your mic on when you begin speaking so the green light is showing, and off when you've completed your remarks so the red light is showing. For all presenters, please state your name for the record before speaking or responding to questions. May I have a motion on the consent calendar?
So moved. Second.
All right, Commissioner Brim Edwards moves, Commissioner Singleton seconds. Approval of the consent
calendar. Can we get an answer to the
question? Oh, okay. Do you want to pull number one? Okay, so we are going to pull the consent C1 from the consent calendar. So can I have a motion to approve the consent calendar for items C2 and C3?
So moved.
Okay. Okay, so we have that from Commissioner Brim Edwards and Commissioner Singleton. And the board clerk will now take a roll call vote.
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes. The consent calendar, the consent agenda is approved. All right, so we will now hear public testimony.
Opportunity for public comment on non-agenda matters. This is a time for the board to hear public testimony, not for board deliberation. When it is your turn to speak, I will call your name and unmute you or call you to the presenter's table. We'll set a timer for 3 minutes when you begin speaking and announce when your time is up, at which point please wrap up your sentence. We have received 6 people sign up for verbal testimony and 1 written testimony, which was shared with board members and staff. Up first, we have Injured and Pissed Off, Addie Smith, Brian Owendoff, and Charles Johnson.
Morning. My name is Injured and Pissed Off, and I've been battling the Portland city ever since I moved here. In 32 days, it'll be 21 years. I moved here on Labor Day, 2004, and I had to get Oregon Legal Aid to even allow me into housing because I had a service animal. I'm legally blind, and it was a real service animal. And that's federal law, and his predecessor before him was an Oregon assistance animal, and of course all that's documented in, at the state capitol about Chuck Norris writing a letter saying that they'd qualify as assistance animals. The point that I'm making is that I was severely injured in 2010. That'll be 15 years, November 15th, and mistreated even at the hospital with spinal cord injuries that I suffered, as well as a broken hip. And I've been so pissed off, I changed my name. There was a million people in 2016 up on Google that were complaining about their medical treatment and injuries, and nobody had ever had the name, even the federal government, of course, my Social Security card and everything like that. And whenever I get official responses, it's either hi, injured and pissed off, or hello, injured or pissed off, but once in a while it's dear, injured and pissed off. Imagine receiving letters like that. Money talks and BS walks. Well, I'll still walk with money when I sue them. You can't injure people and get away with it. Animal control did nothing with 7 dog attacks in less than 6 years, and the hospital had virtually done nothing. They did have to do the hip surgery, and I'm 4 or 5 inches shorter than what I used to be. I was over 6 feet high, even in high school. And of course, I have memory and balance problems, not being able to walk. The 10-second, on Google, 10-second balance test, everybody ought to look at that for 10 seconds, or it's supposed to be difficult. Well, I can't even stand up on 2 feet for 10 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Hi, you can go ahead and begin. Good morning.
You're up, Brian.
Oh. Sorry about that. Brian Owendoff, live and work in District 1 since 2008. I have led teams that have completed 7 mixed-use towers in downtown Portland's urban core projects that entailed $1.5 billion in value. I also volunteer extensively in the areas of mental health and addiction, working with organizations such as the Behavioral Health Resource Center and Doreen's Kitchen at Bud's Clark's Commons, where we serve over 100 unhoused men monthly. This dual perspective as a developer and as a direct service volunteer gives me a unique perspective and understanding of Portland's mental health and unhoused and economic crises. I'm testifying to formally request an immediate investigation into serious concerns raised in a recent Oregon Secretary of State Audit Division report, which revealed significant misuse of public funds within the preschool program. According to its findings, one provider, identified as Provider 2, collected over $833,000 in taxpayer funds while enrolling as few as 9 children over a 3-year period, despite reporting capacity for 63 seats. Public records now strongly indicate that this provider is Village Care Enterprise LLC, a preschool owned by Ms. Leslie Barnes, the current director of Multnomah County's Preschool and Early Learning Division, which administers the Preschool for All program. The situation raises multiple red flags about accountability, oversight, and potential conflicts of interest. Potential. At a time when public confidence in government and services is already fragile, especially in areas like early education and homelessness, we cannot afford even the perception that leaders may be misusing funds intended for vulnerable families. In light of these findings, I urge the chair to do the following 4 things. 1, open an independent investigation into any conflict of interest, financial misreporting, or malfeasance by Ms. Barnes or her affiliated entities. 2, suspend Ms. Barnes from her leadership role during the course of the investigation to preserve the integrity of the Preschool for All program. 3, audit all contracts and funding decisions made under her authority to ensure that they met standards of transparency, equity, and effectiveness. 4, publicly release findings and comment to structural reforms to prevent future misuse of funds if it so happens to be reality. Multnomah County has invested billions of dollars into services for vulnerable populations. The public deserves assurances that these resources are being used responsibly and effectively. Any instance of fraud, waste, or abuse must be swiftly addressed and officials held accountable, regardless of position. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Bridge Crane Charles Simca Johnson, and 2 out of 3 ain't bad. With the consent agenda, we managed to get 2 of the 3 items through. They don't even ever get to be talked about, so it's good to see that we're back to what was, I think, was pulled off the consent agenda not that long ago, appointments to the community budget advisory committees, and that we did also consent agenda clear. A notice of intent to integrate community health workers into ADVSD, Aging and Disabled Veterans Services Division. I spent too much time here. We won't even talk about C1 because it's got the word that the federal government will become triggered if we talk about C1, so we better not say anything about that one. Last week when we were here, before me, a couple people who work in probation and parole spoke in public comment at the beginning, of course, because when that agenda item came up, we'd been told that we couldn't comment after the presentation. And during the presentation, I think it came out that like just over 100 out of 4,000 people maybe were subjected to a day or more in jail. And so, you know, that got me thinking about, well, what's going on over at the jail? I don't pay enough attention. I do know it's been a little while since we had anybody sneak their drugs in and die from overdose, but I don't really know where we're at. Really, the only publicly facing information that's really easily available is interesting. Y'all finally released Ms. Avalos. Ms. Avalos is no longer in jail. Of course, this isn't Candace Avalos. This is a different Ms. Avalos who was there for about 10 days. When you go to the jail website, mcso.us/paid, not maybe the best acronym, PAID, you can get a list and it'll tell you that we usually release about 420, 430 people per day. I don't have any tracking on that, so I don't know if that's an improvement or stagnant or whatever. I do know that somehow, just from that information, some poor person had been in there since 2023. So when we're dealing with people that are on probation and parole and being concerned about them maybe spending a day or how long in jail, we really need to look at overall how well or not we're using that sanction. You need input from criminal psychologists, because one thing I think that we don't ever talk about is the fact that people are different. And some people need a rapid sanction. Sending them to jail 3 years after they were charged just doesn't click in their brain.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Next, we have Jared Essig and Lightning.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning. Of the Multnomah County.
Turn your mic on, please, Jared.
My mic?
Yeah.
There.
And Jared, you'd like a 30-second warning, correct?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Good morning, Multnomah County Board Commissioners and Commissioners of the Library Board of Taxation. My name is Jared Essig. I'm a volunteer librarian with Wikisource, the world's largest repository of public domain and ancient documents. And a volunteer librarian, advisor here in Portland and elsewhere. I'm also an Aristotelian philosopher, biblical scholar, and historian of ancient and modern history, including American history, which is what I'm here to talk to you about now in honor of Juneteenth and July 4th. And before I complain to you about what your librarians are doing, let me present to you Wilsonville Public Library and Tualatin Public Library as an example of what you should do instead. And I'm going to ask you to make a resolution to that effect and an investigation as soon as possible. At Wilsonville, there's a feature display for July 4th with documents about American Revolution and Declaration of Independence and other constitutional documents. It's there that I obtained this book, The Landmark Documents in Our History, where I learned about the Mayflower Compact and about John Winthrop's speech, City on a Hill, that gets quoted by all our politicians today. And I read the Declaration of Independence and a bunch of other historical documents of interest, including the Treaty of Paris that ended the war. Now, none of that information is available at the Multnomah County Libraries. In mid-July, you're going to find that Juneteenth is still being celebrated. And Juneteenth is being celebrated, just a minute. It's not Marcus Garvey's Pan-Africanist movement that liberated the slaves of America. It's the Union Army operating under the Stars and Stripes. So instead of this black, red, yellow, and green flag, we need the Stars and Stripes up to celebrate Juneteenth, including the 500,000 or 1 million American white boys and white men who died in the Union Army to make that possible. Now, also, July 4th, Independence Day, there's a great speech by Frederick Douglass, What to a Slave is the 4th of July. I recommend that you learn that. There's nothing, you're not going to learn about the Missouri Compromise or about the 1850 Compromise or the Dred Scott decision or any of the other historical facts that made these events reality from our librarians. That's a massive problem, okay? Now, black history is American history, and American history is also black American history. And Our librarians claim to be woke, but they're not. They're sleepwalking. They're ignoramuses. This is not inclusive. It's not equitable. It's a misuse of the concept of diversity in order to promote an ideological monoculture. And that's why DEI programs are under attack around the country, and rightly so. So unless you do an investigation and a resolution, I'm going to ask my colleagues in the federal government to do an investigation themselves to determine if any federal laws have been broken and to withhold federal funds if they are.
Thank you.
One last call for Addie Smith. Oh, Layton, sorry.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Superhumanity X1, X7, X3333. Now, it appears as though the Portland Police and the Sheriff's Department is really going after the Central Library, using it as a scapegoat for the shooting that took place in front of a public parking garage, which is owned by the city. And yet they're deferring everything over to the library, scapegoating as though the library is the cause of this type of violence and everything that's going on. They're attacking the private security company there that I think does outstanding work, outstanding. And they're also attacking the staff, which I think is inappropriate. I think they're doing really good work at the library. So again, instead of scapegoating and looking at what's in front of you, which was a city-owned property, take the blame for it and try to figure out how to correct it. Don't point the finger at Lightning Super Central Library, and do not do a broad stroke brush across it, criminality, as you're going to have a defamation of character lawsuit slapped against you that makes President Trump's numbers look very small. Do not go after the Central Library. Now, issue number two on the national debt clock. I want to have the national debt clock put at Pioneer, what I call Town Square. I'll be talking with certain developers on that, similar to what the late Seymour Durst did in New York. And we'll have a clear understanding what the national debt is any and all times, what your share of the national debt will be any and all times. And we're going to have that in bright lights, a clock, which I'm hoping to have this push through within the next 6 months. Now, on the national debt itself, on the $37 trillion, which I offered a $1 trillion prize, someone stepped up already for that prize. The name is Elon Musk. Again, at his companies, he's saying that he will increase the overall economy 10 times over. That will buy down the national debt. Also, he's stating that he will eliminate poverty through the United States. That is another goal that I want to have happen. So Elon Musk is able to accomplish this. And again, he will receive the $1 trillion grant when he does. And again, he will be the first person on planet Earth to be a trillionaire, net worth trillionaire. I'm not talking his company market cap. And again, does he have the ability to do it? Absolutely. Get it done, Elon.
Great. Thank you. Tayshia, we will go to C1. First.
Okay. C1, budget modification number NOND-001-26, reclassify 2 vacant FTE in the Office of Diversity and Equity.
May I have a motion? Commissioner Singleton moved. Commissioner Brim Edwards second. So approval of C1. All right. And I believe we have Christian Elkin, our county budget director, here to help speak to this item. Thank you for jumping in this morning.
Thank you, everyone. It's nice to see you again. I feel like I've been on a long vacation away from you. I spent so much time with you. So for the record, Christian Elkin, budget director, I use she, her pronouns. This reclass is for the two ADA positions that are related to the work that's being done, like on the website redesign and those types of things. The class comp, the positions were taken to class comp. As you know, sometimes we have to guess in the budget what the position should be. And then it takes time to work through class comp to really identify kind of the scope of work, especially in an area that's so new for the county and is really kind of a really unique scope of work for a project like this. So the information was taken to class comp. They determined that the position actually needed to be at a lower classification, and these positions are vacant, so I just want to identify that. Typically, we're within range, right? Like there's, but in this instance, it was a pretty significant difference between the two ranges of the job classifications. And so what you're seeing is about a $45,000 difference across the two positions. We probably should have wrote in the BUD mod that these two positions are also included in the vacancy savings estimates that the board adopted as part of. So NONDI actually has a pretty significant target that we're trying to hit for vacancy savings to meet the requirements of what we put in the adopted budget. It's about $247,000 for NONDI. So it's a pretty big, it's the second largest amount for any department. So the goal here is to right size the positions, but then that savings needs to go towards the vacancy savings that we've already identified because NONDI's budget was reduced overall to meet that target. It probably would have been helpful if we would have wrote that in the APR so that as you were reading it, you understood that this was part of that larger kind of scope of work that the county's doing. In a year where we don't have that, something like that, then what we would do is recommend that the department really figure out where that savings would be reprogrammed and then come and make a case to you all about if that makes sense to keep it in the program itself or if it makes sense to return it to the general fund.
Okay, hold on one second. Tayshia, did we have any public testimony on this?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to the board for questions. Commissioner Moyer.
Thank you, I appreciate this. Just, I guess, wanting a little bit additional clarification. Why then is the $45,000 being reallocated into supplies and not general fund?
It's still in the general fund. It's just in supplies. And then the directions to the department or to the program itself is that they cannot spend that because that funding would need to go towards the savings target amount for the total positions that we're saving. Because when we did that estimate, we based it on that higher classification for those positions. And so then we assumed, you know, a quarter of savings by the delayed hiring or, you know, the length that it takes. And so we're just truing up what the true personnel costs are gonna be in that program. And then we just parked it in materials and supplies, knowing that they're not gonna spend it because we're going to return it to the general fund basically to cover that vacancy savings.
Okay, yeah, I think my curiosity was why supplies.
Yeah, and we should have just put in some more narrative in there to explain that, so okay. I apologize for that.
And then just another area of clarification. The work that was intended for these positions has not changed, so they will be doing
correct
ADA work.
Right. Everything goes through class comp, and so they're looking at all of those considerations as they're figuring out what the right job classification is to do that scope of work.
Okay, thank you, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, any other questions for Christian?
I just wanna, since we did this, put on the conversation.
Sure.
Questions I could ask.
Absolutely.
And so Christian, I'm just gonna say a bunch of things because you didn't answer these questions. Mine was, I do think there's a process piece here that's important for folks to hear. I did ask, ODE if they had talked with the employee resource groups because these position reclasses actually impact them and who's doing the coordinator work. And they did not. And I just think it's important to say that when we're making changes that impact employees, that it's important that we give opportunity for feedback on that. I will definitely keep an eye on making sure that the employee resource groups still feel fully supported, considering now it's going back to a previous form, which sounds like that form was changed for a reason. And so I just wanna make sure that we're still supporting those employee groups in the way that they need to be. And it's less about the dollars of this, other than to say, I was hoping we could capture that for the rebalance that I know is coming. And now I hear that that isn't money we were going to be able to use. So that's unfortunate.
Apologies. Again, we could have just written a couple sentences in there. And it's new, right? The vacancy savings is kind of a new thing that every department is figuring out the best way to talk about that. And so I just want to make sure, as kind of the budget analyst for non-D, that we meet all of our identified targets for general fund.
Thank you, Christian. Any other questions for Christian? Commissioner Brim Edwards.
So this is just maybe a clarification based on the question that Commissioner Moyer asked. So the current position, or one of the current positions, it's the digital in FY 25. It was the digital accessibility project. So we approved that last year as part of the budget, and it never got filled. So no work happened in that project?
I don't believe so. I would have to phone a friend on the. I know that there was some complication, and also we were in process of, because this is working alongside of IT and the project, the larger project itself. But I don't think I'm the right person to answer that question for you. I apologize.
Okay. So we approved this position. It didn't get filled, so the work didn't happen. But to Commissioner Moyer's question, the role that once it gets reclassed, that even though it's reclassed to have a different classification, the digital accessibility project is going to go forward.
Hi, Chair and Commissioners, Jenny Smith. Chair, Chief of Staff, she, her pronouns. That is my understanding. I'll have to get back to you with more details. But yes, this project will proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Jones Dixon, do you have any questions?
No questions.
Okay, thank you. Thanks both of you for coming down here. And we'll have follow-up on this last question. Okay. Tayshia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Megan Peterson?
Aye. The budget modification is approved.
R1, budget modification number DCA-001-26, Coordinated Care Pathway Center Lease Appropriation.
Thank you. May I have a motion?
Second.
Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Moyer seconds. Approval of R1. So we have DCA here this morning to present a budget modification that raises the appropriation amount for the Coordinated Care Pathway Center lease to support continued and uninterrupted operations of deflection and sobering until the permanent facility opens. Due to the urgency which Multnomah County needed to create a deflection program by September 1st, 2024, and the available real estate options during that time, we entered into a lease agreement for the current Coordinated Care Pathway Center instead of purchasing a building, and the landlord insisted on a termination clause in the lease. DCA has been working diligently with the owner's representatives in recent months to find amenable terms for both sides that will allow the county to continue operations in the same location until the permanent facility opens and allow the owner to maintain their investment. As we come up upon the one-year anniversary of the change in drug laws that began deflection in Multnomah County, as well as the state of Oregon, we will have a good chance in the next couple months to take full stock of how this program has impacted our work to address mental health and addiction in our community. I want to take a moment to remind us that every single deflection or sobering visit happens because one of our community members, someone who may or may not have been seeking help, says yes to voluntarily engagement with our programs. These are people who take a leap of faith to start or deepen a path toward recovery and stability, and I applaud each and every person who has taken this step. I applaud each provider or staffer who engages with people and helps provide a welcoming front door at the Pathway Center. And I'm grateful for the talented and dedicated team at our health department that has been instrumental in making everything happen at the Pathway Center, including recent and upcoming expansion of our services and collaborators. With that, I'll turn it over to DCA for additional details on the bud mod and lease terms. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. I'm Nancy Artman, the Department of County Assets Budget and Finance Director, and I use she, her pronouns. I will allow my colleague from the Health Department to introduce herself.
Thank you, Nancy. My name is Trista Zugel, Health Department Budget Director. I use she, her pronouns.
Thank you. I'm here today to discuss a budget modification brought forward by DCA and the Health Department for the Coordinated Care Pathway Center, CCPC, lease. This budget modification reflects the fiscal year 2026 increase in the annual base rent charged to the deflection and sobering program. Beginning July 1st, 2025, base rent increased by $188,890, going from $254,000 to $442,890 per year. This budget modification extends the initial term from August 2026 to December 31st, 2027. Aligning with the current scheduled move-out and opening of the Permanent Sobering and Crisis Stabilization Center in the fall of 2027. It eliminates a termination clause that allows the landlord to terminate the lease with a six-month notice. It increases square footage from 16,600 square feet to 28,120 square feet based on $15.75 per square foot. And finally, it specifies up to 4 6-month extension options, which allow for extending beyond the December 31, 2027 date if needed. If approved, this action will allow both the Department of County Assets and the Health Department to have sufficient appropriation to cover the cost of the CCPC lease in fiscal year 2026. It increases the Facilities Management Fund number 3505 appropriation by $188,890. This is a one-time only adjustment for fiscal year 2026. And the Health Department Fund 33069, State Behavioral Health Deflection Program, has balanced their allocation of their budget figures to accommodate this increase.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Did we have any public testimony on this item?
Yes, we have one person signed up.
All right. If you guys will just step back and then we'll go to board questions after that.
Charles Johnson.
Ouch. I'm Bridge Crane Charles Simca Johnson, and it's always painful when we think about the structure of the county and the home rule of the county and the fact that even with all that power and history, y'all still got to pay rent. I guess the only upside of that is it helps you feel the pain for those of us who are not homeowners, and we also have to pay rent. We find it very difficult to implement budget expansions. So I'm not really fluent in the commercial real estate market right now. I can't offer any comparative value of this landlord. You know, are they gouging you? No, of course. We're not supposed to say they're gouging you because they're letting you off the hook for a notice agreement. But what's really critical, and thank you for mentioning in your opening remarks, Commissioner JVP, is the people. But in the perfect world, this would be paired with the expenditure per patient, client, whatever we're calling people at the place that we're not calling the Deflection Center, the Pathways Center for Coordinated Recovery, which maybe it's also part-time a sobering center. I really do feel, though, that as constituents and taxpayers, there needs to be a dashboard where we can look at the per person through the door cost. And it gets more complicated at the not called deflection center because we need to also have the number of walkouts, because the walkouts really affect the cost per person. That is, if I'm not mistaken, after it pays the salaries of the local workers, the profit goes to an out-of-state service provider. So I hope that as we move forward, there'll be financially transparent talk about successes at the Pathways Center that we're treating more people essentially for the same amount of money, or at least a per capita cost. This is a huge issue with poor people and people in mental health crisis, because we know that some of us get funded for $2,000 per month just for housing at hotels that you keep under a room block agreement, and other people get thrown out of shelters and shelter capacity. And I can't accuse you of decreasing shelter capacity. I haven't kept an eye on the number. But the idea that some people are stuck in congregate shelters on bunk beds at a cost of $100 per person while you put two other people in $2,000 hotel rooms is why we're in this mess. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I'll invite Nancy and Trista to come back down, and we'll go to the board for questions. We'll start with Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you, Chair. Just thank you and other folks who I don't think are in the room, who I know this has been a bit of a process, and so I've had some other conversations about this lease and the additional space that's a part of this, and just want to appreciate the work that's going in to figure out how or if we can use that additional space for county purposes, knowing that it's not a place we can put other services. But I think it's just, I appreciate the due diligence. I never love paying more for a lease, and I understand why we are where we are. So just thank you for the work.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Commissioner Brim Edwards.
Thank you for bringing this forward. I'm just noting in our sort of the briefing that we received, or the materials we received in advance, while it has an increase in the rent and in the square footage, about 12,000 square feet additional space that we will now have that we won't, that we're not going to use for the deflection center, correct? There's no use of the additional space.
My understanding is it could potentially be used for storage, yes.
Okay. So I would ask, and I don't think I need to make an amendment, but I would ask if DCA could come back by September 30th and give us an update on the use of that space. So we're, if that's...
That is something that I am very actively interested in and have been talking with Dan and Tracy about. So we will definitely be able to report back to the board by that.
Okay. I just hate to, like, we approve the additional space, pay an extra money, and then not be staying on top of the use of that space. So I appreciate it without having to amend it that we have an agreement to bring back the progress on filling that space. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Moyer? All right, thank you. Just want to thank you for the work. I want to thank Dan, your entire team, for all the work on making this happen. I think having the certainty that we are going to be able to be continuing to provide these services during the entire length that we need to have a temporary space is certainty. And as I just mentioned, very interested in how we are going to maximize the additional space that we now have access to. So thank you so very much for all the work on this. Tasia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes, the budget modification is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
R2. Notice of intent to apply for $447 million from the FY26 USDOT Bridge Investment Program Grant Program for the construction phase of the Earthquake Ready Burnside Bridge Project.
May I have a motion?
Second.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon moves. Commissioner Moyer seconds. Approval of R2. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Margie Bradway. I'm the DCS director. I go by she, hers. And I'm here today with my colleagues. Go ahead.
Nick Baldwin, Sarah, Multnomah County Attorney, he, him.
And Megan Neal, Engineering Services Manager with Transportation, she, her pronouns.
And Nick and I are just here to answer questions. Megan's going to walk us through the NOI.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. As I mentioned, I am an engineering services manager with the Transportation Division. I'm also a project manager for the Earthquake Ready Burnside Bridge Program. And I'm here to you today to seek approval for an NOI for the FY26 USDOT Bridge Investment Program grant in the amount of $447 million, which would go a long way in funding the construction phase of our project. This grant does require a 50% match, which we would largely provide through a loan funded by our ongoing revenue from the county's vehicle registration fee, along with some additional federal and state funds. We have been here in the past to apply for this grant, seek approval to apply for this grant. We are here again. There's just been some updates to the grant language with the incoming administration, so we just need to submit a fresh application again, and the application is due August 1st. So with that, we're happy to answer any questions you have about the grant.
Thank you so much. Did we have any public testimony on this, Tasia?
Yes, we have one person signed up.
All right, we'll call you guys back in just a second. Thank you.
Lightning.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Humanity X1, X7, X3333. As you know, I've been the most outspoken person against having these bridges upgraded at this time. And a lot of my reasoning has to do with the COVID and a lot of different expenses that we're trying to figure out how we come up with the additional money. I have a big problem on this Burnside Bridge being closed for 10 plus years to do this construction. It's going to be a nightmare. And again, I would prefer that this kind of money that we're talking about when we're getting into the billions of dollars for these bridges, that would have been diverted into affordable housing. And when we're talking about doing a 50% match here, again, from the, I understand, vehicle registration fees, possibly. Again, that amount I would have rather had gone into affordable housing, and I'm talking the construction side of affordable housing. Again, I think it's been a failure of the municipalities, especially the City of Portland Metro and Multnomah County, for not rolling out another affordable housing bond. Again, at the City of Portland, they never did a bond before in the history of Portland. I sat in front of Commissioner Salzman and said, get out of your chair, do something like they did in San Francisco, where the late Ed Lee was doing a $310 million affordable housing bond. Just roll it out. You're leaving anyway. What do you have to lose? And my number was about $150 million to try to play it on the safe side. Obviously, he came up in the $250 million plus. And then when we're talking about the affordable housing bond at Metro, again, they didn't even originally want to do that, okay? They were sitting back. They had hesitation. It's not really what we do over here. We have a transportation issues we're trying to fund. This might block that out. Well, they ended up rolling that, and they got that done too. None of you have taken any chances anymore. You're sitting back, you're waiting, you're going, I don't know, maybe President Trump's going to send us some federal money, which he's not. You could have rolled out a bond. You could have talked to Metro to roll out a bond. You could have talked to the City of Portland to roll out a bond. And I'm talking somewhere around maybe $350 million to $500 million. And the reason why I like to see these bonds rolled out is I like to keep the construction workers working. I like to keep them employed. I like to keep them having different projects to do. We have shut everything down because you're just sitting back going, well, gee, I'm really hoping President Trump will take care of us. He's not. Roll out an affordable housing bond. I'm not happy about these bridges and these costs.
Thank you. All right, we will go to the board for questions. We will start with Commissioner Brim Edwards.
I don't have any questions. I'm very supportive.
Thank you. Commissioner Jones-Dixon.
It's a no question Thursday for me. Okay. No questions either. Supportive. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Moyer.
Yeah, just question around how much staff time we're going to dedicate to this application in light of the federal administration. I am glad we're applying. Yeah. I think that is the right thing to do. I appreciate our realistic expectations. I just am wondering, you know, like, how all-consuming this might be for your time.
Yeah, thank you. We did ponder that, so good question, Commissioner. On a no-question day, I'm happy to answer that question. I think we're realistic about our chances to be competitive for discretionary grants with this current federal administration. But there's also a couple other considerations. First of all, there is benefit to keeping your grant kind of at high ratings in line. There is existing USDOT staff there that we want to keep this application on our radar. There also could be legal benefits for standing and some of the lawsuits that we're in. So those are other considerations. But that said, it didn't take that much staff work because we've already done it before. It took a little cleaning up. So if it really took a lot of staff work, I'm not sure the benefits would outweigh the work to your question. But in this case, it does.
Thank you, Commissioner Singleton.
No questions, just appreciate and understand the strategy. Fully supportive of this application. Thank you.
Yeah, and I am as well. We know that, you know, this is a project that the county has been working on for years. We know how critical it is, not just for the county, but for our entire region to have a bridge that connects the east and west sides of Portland immediately available after a Cascadia level event. And we are persevering in that. So I appreciate all the work that is going into this and appreciate the continued request to the federal government for assistance with all of our work. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Marina, may we have I'm so sorry, Tasia. Tasia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Baker Peterson?
Aye. The notice of intent is approved. Thank you. Well, it was no question Thursday, but it was also a very speedy regular agenda for today. So we have time now for board comments on non-agenda items. I'll open it up to commissioners to see his items to discuss. Commissioner Moyer, would you like to begin?
Yeah, I would just like to address an issue that I don't know how much attention is getting. It gets a lot in my social media feeds, but I may be self-selecting, and that has to do with the executive order that the president put forward last week relating to his direction to HUD to not fund services in areas that continue to use a housing first model, as well as the encouraging of the expansion of civil commitment to not only people who are an imminent threat to themselves or others, which is the Supreme Court standard for the use of involuntary treatment, but to also include people who are mentally ill and homeless. And then to go on to say in the executive order that all judicial precedent or consent decree arrangements do not have to be followed, which is wildly unconstitutional because the executive branch cannot tell other jurisdictions to ignore the judicial branch. But I, as somebody who has spent part of my career and as somebody who identifies as a person with a disability, am profoundly horrified by what a huge step backwards this executive order is for the rights of people with disabilities. To have mental illness is not a crime. It is a disability. One in which many people can successfully treat or find the support necessary to live full, wonderful, inclusive lives. And the idea that the liberty of somebody with a disability is of less value than the liberty of people without disabilities is atrocious. The second issue is the idea that institutionalization is a humane and kind thing to do. Oregon has the honor of being the first state in the United States to stop institutionalizing people with developmental disabilities. Many, many states in the United States still will institutionalize people with developmental disabilities for no other reason than their diagnosis as having a developmental disability. There is a Supreme Court case that is incredibly important to the disability community, and it is called Olmstead. And it is in that lawsuit that the Supreme Court ruled that all people with disabilities have the right to live in the least restrictive environment possible. And that is core and central to the values of the disability rights community. There's a saying in the community, nothing about us without us. And that is about that the humanity of all people, regardless of ability, to be in charge of their own lives, their own destinies, have their own dreams and expectations. And to have an executive order that is so pejorative, so out of touch with the reality of the lives of people with disabilities, including people with mental illness, and so intensely cruel as to not know the history of institutionalization for people with disabilities is personally horrifying. I am proud of what the state of Oregon has achieved when it comes to the rights of people with disabilities. We continue to work on those issues, but I implore all of Oregon and the United States to view this executive order as the unconstitutional order that it is, and fully and completely disregard it, for it is inhumane, it is cruel, it is not effective, it is not evidence-based, and it dehumanizes a significant portion of our population.
Thank you, Commissioner Moore. I appreciate that. Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Moyer. I wholeheartedly agree. And on that note, I do think there's some conversation that we should have as a board around these attestations and things that are being asked of our staff to be able to sign. I know that the federal work group looks at these, and some of them that I've seen, I think we talked about on Tuesday, not only are they unconstitutional, but there are huge concerns about data and the requirements around data sharing that give me a lot of pause. So I don't know when that will be, but I do think there's a board kind of policy direction conversation to have here at some point here in the near future. I spoke a little bit with some departments during my check-ins with them, and just wanted to raise to the rest of the board that I think it's critical that we also look at putting together a list of priority asks for the state. We faced a lot of significant state cuts. They put some money aside. There will likely be multiple emergency board meetings. It may or may not be a ton of opportunity, but in my experience at the state, e-boards happen fast, and if you're not already on the list, you're not going to get funded. So I think it's critical that we have a plan for those emergency board meetings, what our priority ask might be, as well as thinking about how to really have a good legislative strategy and engage the legislature during legislative days, not just about preschool for all, which I think will come up in their first ledge days in the next month or so here after special session, but about the broader issues. I want to remind folks we saw over a 60% cut in eviction prevention from the state, as well as housing placement out of shelter from the state, and I think still trying to figure out what our cuts are in shelter services. So as we continue to put more and more local dollars into these programs, I think it's critical that we're poised to ask the state to show up for our most vulnerable as well. I just wanted to highlight at the national level, I've been pleased to see lawmakers fighting to gain access to our ICE facilities. That is something that I think needs to continue. And I just want to remind folks that, again, we still have folks who are being taken off the streets, whether that's at their employer or when they're at immigration court. We still continue to have our citizens being kidnapped and taken. A couple of events I wanted to highlight. Just next Wednesday is Proclamation Day, a big one for me. I'm very excited about is Black Business Month. I think we're co-sponsoring that, and we also have some awesome food afterwards. We will have a reception right after the proclamation with some Gourmet Brothers barbecue that I'm very excited to eat and share with y'all. And then I also just wanted to announce, and the details are in my newsletter as well, but the Black United Fund of Oregon is now accepting applications for the next cohort of emerging entrepreneur programs. It's a transformative 9-month program designed to empower BIPOC entrepreneurs, and you get some personalized support and expert guidance as you try to grow your business. It's a pretty short window of application timeline, so just wanted to encourage folks to hop in there and apply if you are a Black entrepreneur. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Singleton. Commissioner Brim Edwards.
Thanks for my colleagues for their statements this morning. I'm in complete agreement. Looking forward to Proclamation Wednesday. I want to just start by sharing, congratulating NAMI for the celebration of their 40th anniversary. Yesterday, they had their grand opening of their new facility in District 3 on 102nd. I was there about a year and a half ago when they first purchased it, and it's been transformed into a warm and welcoming place to support individuals and families and people who love people who have a mental illness and need support. So it was great to be there yesterday with so many people who have been supported by and are involved in NAMI. So congrats to NAMI. The second issue I wanted to raise is, and I want to just put this on the record because it's something I communicated yesterday to the chair, following the Secretary of State's audit and the news Tuesday evening, the county's director of the preschool program is the owner of a preschool that was subject to a potential referral to the Oregon Department of Justice, that the county, in response to that, the county said that it was going to be conducting an internal probe. I very strongly believe that an internal probe needs to be replaced by an independent investigation, not conducted by county management. I think a management reviewing itself is not is what it would be expected of a public entity. I think the findings to have credibility and to ensure confidence in the oversight and management of county dollars and our programs, that it needs to be independent. And by doing it independently, that provides external credibility, and also not just for the county's preschool program at a pretty important moment for it, but also by extension the county. I just don't think this can be either swept under the rug or handled internally. It needs to be approached independently and reviewed in that manner, and then the findings shared.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Jones Dixon.
Thank you, Chair. Just want to give a huge shout out to the BHRC and just want to personally say thank you for giving us a really good tour. First time I visited the BHRC was like 3 years ago. So it was amazing to learn about the progress. One of the biggest things that I learned was from, I believe it was Jamie, she said, we talk a lot about the systems of care and not a whole lot about the systems of healing and what she needed in order to make it through on her journey. So just want to say shout out to her and everybody that's doing the work. Also want to just plant the seed as far as we need a BHRC 0.2 out east. That would be great. So I expect questions or conversations around that moving forward. Then also want to just say thank you to Cole for the invitation to come and speak to the C2C, the college, the county to college interns. I think I see one of them here. I don't have my glasses. That was a whole lot of fun. We spent about 5 or 10 minutes just talking about all things county and how we're building America's favorite county moving forward. And then lastly, actually, that's all I have this morning. It looks like Isaiah is here from as well. So welcome to the county.
We do have a visitor today.
But that's all I have. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you so much. So really appreciate the comments and conversation this morning. I will say, around the executive orders, and especially the one that you referred to that came out last week, that was, I can't say astounding because so many of them have just been pretty incredible. But I will say that Stacey Cowan has been already having conversations around the impacts of this executive order, both with other entities. It's something that I have on the agenda to talk with in my next meeting with the governor. And we are doing work within the departments and legal to review this and the impact of that. To your comment, Commissioner Singleton, about having a board conversation. So we actually have for next Thursday scheduled from government relations, a state legislative briefing. And I think that would also be a good time to inform the board on how the county is responding to the EOs and the new requirements that are coming. So I'm going to see if we can add that into that part of the presentation. So I think that would be a good time to do that. I did want to say a few words about the story that ran in the Willamette Week yesterday, because I want the community to hear directly from me about the next steps that the county is taking. I am extremely concerned about the information that has surfaced this week. I've directed COO Chris Neal to lead an investigation and verify the information contained in the media reports about our Director of Early Learning Division and her relationship to Preschool Promise and the state's recent audit division's investigation. The allegations are serious and require a review and an independent verification to gain a complete understanding of what has transpired. Responsible use of public dollars and accountability to the public are central to Multnomah County and my values. Our next steps are to complete the investigation and take action as necessary on the state's report, as well as any of our internal rules or policies that might pertain to choices made by this particular employee. The integrity of the Preschool for All program is important to me, but even more so to the thousands of children, family, and workers and providers whose lives are enriched by this program. Anything that undermines that work is incredibly damaging, and I expect quick action on resolving this matter. I also wanted to comment on a meeting that had happened earlier this week. It was the Pearl District Neighborhood Association Town Hall with the mayor and the Portland Police Commander Hughes this past Monday. I appreciated the community's engagement during that meeting. As part of the discussion, I heard an overwhelming consensus from our neighbors that what we're dealing with on a daily basis on our streets is not just a homelessness issue, but also a mental health and addiction issue. I agree with this assessment and believe that in the work that Multnomah County's Health Department is doing to fill this gap with services and pathways out of these cycles. Over the past year, especially under the leadership of this board, Health Department Director Banks, and many diligent Health Department employees, this county has worked tirelessly to build up a more robust mental health system that can respond to the needs on the street and compensate for the decades of disinvestment in these services. We have daily interactions at the Behavioral Health Resource Center, at the Coordinated Care Pathway Center, to provide many services, including an evidence-based deflection program, sobering services, and referrals to the most needed next steps for so many across our community. We have contracts with many wonderful providers who bring decades of expertise in helping to connect with people and offer true support. to make the most of the system and see to it that the needs of the people who are homeless are met. We need buy-in and active partnership across many jurisdictions and systems. I want to stress that it's only through these partnerships that we can respond to the demands from our neighbors and to the suffering that we're seeing on our street. And then last, oh, yes.
Well, before I just have something I want to say before you adjourn the meeting. Sorry, I thought you were
going to adjourn. Oh, sure. Just one thing. I do want to say a few words of thanks to the many people who are engaging with the county in the recent days as we continue to process the fatal shooting that took place on July 1st in downtown Portland. I will say I wanted to report out, and I've spoken to some of you on the board about this, but this week we've continued to have very productive conversations with our partners at the Portland Police Bureau. I really appreciate the leadership there that is focused on staying at the table and working through solutions that will have a direct and positive impact on the environment in the library and in the surrounding blocks. The conversations have been ongoing and are deeply appreciated by me and the senior leadership at Multnomah County. I wanted to say a special thanks to Robert King from PPB for his thought partnership and for joining us next Thursday to brief this board along with Library Director Lewis. So we're going to have a library update to this board, as we talked about before, and he will be joining us. I also want to call it and express my appreciation for the many local businesses, our neighbors at the Central Library, who took the time out of their busy work days to connect with Library Director Annie Lewis and my policy advisor, Garrett Pryor, on visits that they made this week. Those visits, there were very heart-wrenching stories of people who were there in the immediate aftermath of what happened on July 1st shooting, and people are greatly affected by that. We also heard about the prolonged struggle that businesses are facing with our economy and really the lack of systemic answers to housing and mental health care. So really, continuing that outreach is going to be very important. I will say that said, we have also heard a full range of options on what should and can be done to address this issue. Throughout all of this, we heard an appreciation for the Central Library and the ongoing efforts everyone is taking to provide welcoming spaces. I will say our small business neighbors, many of whom have been in their location for decades, were appreciative of the county's offering partnership with Central Library. It showed and really highlighted the shared commitment everyone has to have a healthy and thriving downtown Portland. So I want to thank Garrett and Annie for that work and as Ed said, the ongoing conversations, and I'm looking forward to the board briefing next week on that on Thursday. Commissioner Brim Edwards.
I just want to go back to sort of my comments and then your comments, because in the paper, it was described as an internal probe, and then you said today that the county is having county staff do the investigation, and then you described it as independent, and I'm curious how it's independent if it's done by staff. And I very strongly believe that you can't investigate yourself. It won't have any credibility. And if the commission needs to take some sort of action to ensure that we have something that's done independently so that, again, it has credibility. So your statement had two pieces to it, one that called it independent, and then the other piece was that staff was going to be doing it. So can you please clarify how it could be independent if staff is conducting it?
So my statement on independent referred to the fact that the facts presented in the audit division's investigation needed to be independently verified by the county. And so that is the piece. And I mean, I will say I have full faith in the work that Chris Neal is leading at the county to do the investigation. I will say that if part of that investigation, he recommends that it merits an outside coming in. We are still really in the fact gathering and decision-making, but everything is on the table and it's going to really depend on what the scope is needed.
So yesterday I had two meetings that were just my regular one-on-ones. The first was with the COO, Chris Neal, and the second was with you. And I had the same conversation with Chris Neal. This does nothing to do with my lack of confidence. I have full confidence in the COO to do his job. I think it's inappropriate, though, to ask him to conduct the investigation. And I don't think it will have a lot of credibility with the broader community if it's done internally. So this doesn't have anything to do with a lack of confidence, but it's just having been in public, in a public arena for 30-something years, that on something like this, you need to have somebody outside looking at the facts, so that we can, so that they're objectively looked at, and it's not that even if the county produced something, the question later would be like, did we get everything? Because again, it was all done internally. And I just think the seriousness of what has been presented, a potential referral to the Department of Justice, requires that this isn't just an ordinary event, that we do a quick internal investigation. I mean, nothing has been, I would say, other than a phone call, nothing has been shared with the rest of the commission. And again, I think it has very serious repercussions, not just for the preschool program and the credibility of it, but the management, the oversight of just like the entire county. So I'll just set my piece. I don't think it can be done internally.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Commissioner Brim Edwards. I agree, and I think that there's a component here that I also want to make sure to highlight is, in my email yesterday, Chair, I asked that we also actually look at how we are in compliance across our departments with our conflict of interest and our code of ethics policy. It was, yes, the article is disturbing, and I additionally was concerned about what looks like a very clear conflict of interest to me, and wanting to ensure that we are in compliance across the county with our policy. And if there's something we need to do as a board around process to ensure that that happens, then I want that to be highlighted so we can figure that piece out. And I'm not clear that that's a part of this investigation or what, where that component will happen.
Thanks, and I appreciate that. And I want to be clear on how I am looking at this. There is an investigation into an employee's, one specific employee's actions. There is also a larger question of the overall conflict of interest policies and things for the county. And those are two, I see those as related, but still separate things. And I think the scope of that second piece may be large enough to merit the, like, an independent investigation or something. I'm going to look for a recommendation from my COO around that, but I want to distinguish between one thing and the other. So that is how we're approaching it.
But see, here's one of the issues I have, though. It's like, we have no idea even what the scope is, so it seems like things are just being added. And I mean, I think we should just be very, this should be very clear and transparent about what the scope is. So I think it's a great addition, but I would like to know, again, I think this has to have credibility, has to be independent, but also we should be clear about what the scope is that we're looking at, and also ensure that also, as the county proceeds, that we're not also interfering with something that's happening with the DOJ.
Yeah, and we will share information with the board as it becomes available, as this progresses. I've tried to keep folks and be responsive to folks in the conversations that I've had with the board so far about where we are in this process, and we'll continue to do that. That was part of my, the purpose was part of my comments today.
I don't think it can be, we're just having a series of private conversations. Again, that doesn't meet the standard of what needs to happen here.
I appreciate that. And also, part of me making the statement in board comments today was to share publicly about where we are in this process and what the next steps are for this. All right. Thank you. Okay. There being no further business, that concludes today's regular board meeting. There being no further business, the meeting is adjourned.